Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're glad you're here. Here on Driven to Business, we try to talk about business, and we try to talk about it from a variety of angles. The idea of starting your business or growing your business or even being entrepreneurial and successful in your career where you're working for someone else. It's all the same thing. And we do love American business, and we're glad you're here. By the way, we're streaming live on biz1190.com, and today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com. You know, there's never been, probably, and I'll put that caveat in there, there's never probably been a better time to be an entrepreneur. There are so many ideas today. Now, I do listen to a few doom and gloomers who will say that the dollar's about to collapse and all that. I don't have an answer to that. We, you know, in my investments, I do try to do some hedging and so forth, but I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. Well, I will tell you this. It's kind of like living to die. You know, you don't know when you're going to die either, but you live till you do. And if you're in business or thinking of starting a business or running a business, you need to run that business as best you can and then adapt to the situation as it arises. That's what I think you should be doing. I was thinking on the way to the studio today about the idea. You hear it all the time about that 1.3 million people make a full-time living on eBay these days. Now, I don't think that's absolutely true. Daniel Gross wrote an article with Slate Magazine some time ago challenging that, and I think he had a good point. There are people who make a full-time living on eBay, but it's nowhere near those kinds of numbers. And even he got around to saying, you know, if that number had been pared down a bit to like 650,000 in the United States, and even that's way high, because if you look at eBay, to be what they call a power seller, like a bronze level seller, what you do to do that is you have to sell $12,000 per year. Now, that's $12,000 in sales, not in profits. So that's hardly a full-time living for anybody. What eBay has done, however, is augment a number of people's incomes, and eBay certainly has helped many businesses, including our business. We sell, we have a pretty good eBay presence at EMA, and we sell electronic motor drives over eBay, believe it or not. That's kind of in parts for them over eBay. And you know, I do know people that have made some really good hits in eBay. You know, I have myself bought items for a few hundred dollars off and resold them for tens of thousands of dollars after refurbishing them on eBay. You can do that. I know some guys in the music business that will buy torn up musical instruments and refurbish them, make them really nice, and sell them at a nice profit on eBay. That's certainly something to do, but you know, but most people use that as an augment to their income, not as a full-time business. Now, again, if you're working full-time and you're looking for something to do to augment your income a little bit, that may be a great idea, something that you should be doing. A lady named Nicole Fallon wrote in January an article in Business News Daily about what she felt were the best businesses to start in 2015. I don't fully agree with all of her lists, but I thought I'd list them and talk about them a little bit because they are interesting. One thing she said was she was talking about the idea if you can make anything kid-friendly, and she's particularly referring to technology like kid-friendly apps. You know, some years ago, Apple Computer began supplying computers to a number of elementary schools for either little or no cost, and the idea behind it was to get the kids accustomed to using Apple computers. Well, that's a pretty smart idea, isn't it? Because if you whatever computer you start off using and get accustomed to, you know, there are Apple people, there are PC people. But if you find someone who's an Apple person, they really do like Apple, and you have a hard time getting them away from that. Well, one good way to get them to like Apple is to start that when they're a kid and deal with it when they're a kid, and then they will do that. You know, on a little more negative, if you can think about it for a moment, during World War II, the tobacco companies gave free cigarettes to soldiers fighting in Europe and in the Pacific. And you know what happened? Of course, they made customers out of those guys. Now, there may have been a moral dilemma in there that you don't want to go beyond. But the idea of getting people to like your product by letting them learn about it when they're younger. In the case of soldiers, these were young men in their late teens and early 20s, and in the case of Apple, it was kids in elementary school. But here's the deal. There's an interesting study that was done by Common Sense Media, and they said that 3/4 of kids today have access to a mobile device. Now, think about that a minute. 3/4 of kids have access to a mobile device. Now, anytime any entrepreneur hears something like that, in the back of your mind should be a business idea. Okay, because entrepreneurs very often, you know, there's two ways to be an entrepreneur. You can be a guy like Steve Jobs was, and you can invent things that we didn't even know we wanted and then talk us into buying them. That's a hard thing to do, but people can do it. On the other hand, you can look at reality. You look at where things are and you can say, okay, if that's true, if 3/4 of kids have access to mobile devices, well, that opens up a big market. Now, obviously, it's not the kids that have the money. It's their parents. So who you've really got to sell to are the parents. But anything that you can do in terms of a mobile app or anything like that you can get kids hooked on, you will sell a lot of them. And if for the parents, if you can get them to be educational or promote good health or something like that, you'll win them over too. And, you know, if you just wanted to sort of put your toe in the water of that, one thing you could do, if you're able to design apps, just design a couple of kid-friendly apps, give them to kids at your church or if you have kids in the elementary school, give them to other kids in school and get the feedback from them. That would be very low cost for you. You'd get an idea. You may get to adjust them. But, again, it's something you could market and pick up. Now, another idea Nicole had and Ms. Fallon had that's an odd idea to me, but it doesn't appeal to me, but it may to you. She talked about recycling pickups. You know, a lot of us, like in my neighborhood, we all have our little recycle bins and we put our used bottles and cans and plastic goods and metal and things. We put all that in there. What they don't like to pick up, however, though, are things like old cell phones or old televisions, things like that. Actually, this is a bit of an aside, but in our neighborhood, if you have anything like that broken, all you have to do is sit it out on the curb, and by noon it'll be gone. I mean, somebody will come get it because they will go recycle it for the metal or something. So that sort of takes care of itself. But you can imagine there could be a business there. If you could advertise that we will come pick up your old television set or your old stereo or whatever somebody's got lying around, and we will charge a per pound fee just for getting rid of that. As long as it's reasonable, I can see how people would call you and have you do that. My thoughts of that from a business would be you're going to need a lot of that to make a living. So, again, perhaps it's something you could begin in the beginning to do and sort of dip your toe into it and do it a little bit before I invested whole hog in it. I would really want to know what the customers looked like doing that. Now, she has another idea I think is a great idea. It's the idea of being a software trainer. And this appeals to me from a sense of from running a small business. You know, unless you're an accounting business, and perhaps you are, probably you're a little daunted by your accounting program or perhaps other programs you may have in your arsenal that you use every day at work, but you don't really know much about them. And I know at our company, we actually hire some outside folks to come in at the end of the month to balance up our books and do all that because that's not our core business. I have a philosophy in our business that if it's not our core business and we can afford to outsource it, we will outsource it. And there are a lot of business people these days that have that philosophy. So if you're good at some kind of software, and it doesn't have to be accounting software, but that's just something that comes to mind, like QuickBooks or Peachtree or something like that. Yes, they come with manuals, but believe me, nobody reads those. And so if you have those kind of services and you can market yourself to someone that I can come in at the end of the month and I can make that software do what you want it to do, or if you need your invoice designed differently than what it looks like right now, or if you need to be emailing invoices rather than mailing them and you don't know how to do that through the program or something, I'll come in and take care of that for you. That's a valuable service you can offer to someone. And the best part about that is you can actually do that part-time. You can actually do that part-time. And I think you'll find a fair amount of people, they'll be interested in that. The other idea that she had, I'm talking to you about before the break here, is the idea of healthcare consulting. That sounds kind of crazy, but you know, with the combination that we have in this country of aging baby boomers and with Obamacare. Now, I'm a person that would like to see Obamacare repealed, and I hope it gets repealed. But whether it does or not, healthcare is still a complex field. We also have people going into Medicare these days, and if you've not done that, when you get into Medicare and you're faced with choosing Part B, what does that mean? Do you buy supplemental insurance for Part B? The answer is yes, you should do that. Or do you buy supplemental insurance for Part D, which is the drug part of it? Yes, you ought to do that. If you are 65, should you go on Medicare? Well, look, you're almost forced to, whether you want to do that or not. If you're a person that knows those kinds of things, now people may get that from their insurance company. But again, their insurance company also may have a built-in bias to sell them more insurance and so forth. If you could offer yourself, if you have expertise in that field, and you could offer yourself as a healthcare consultant, and you could actually take that out for several ways, even to helping people be more healthy at work and all that kind of thing. You can offer it to small businesses. You can also offer those management and data type services to small healthcare providers. You know, a lot of doctors are faced with the same thing that small businesses are faced with. They're good at their core practice, which is treating patients and healing people. They have a hard time dealing with all this data and everything that they're required to deal with. Now, if you can come in and make their burden easier in that regard, again, that's a career you can have. They will outsource a lot of that. You can implement solutions to improve efficiency, save money, and do it a lot better. One more I'll talk about before the break. We may talk about this after the break as well, because I found this kind of interesting, and this has just popped up the other day. Ms. Fallon talks about the idea of the proliferation of the business of food trucks. Now, if you told me that a few years ago, that food trucks are making a comeback, I would have said you were crazy, because when I was a kid, people did drive down the streets, and if you ever ran industrial plants, you know, the wagon came up, and there were sandwiches on there, usually not very good sandwiches, and you could buy them, and it just saved you from having to go somewhere. And a lot of times at industrial plants, they give you a little bit of time for lunch, but you weren't allowed to go anywhere. Well, today society has changed. People can go somewhere, but also with the traffic and just with the hassle of it. Where I live, Lilburn, Georgia, I noticed on their sign today in Lilburn, Georgia, they were advertising the fact that in downtown Lilburn, the food truck is going to be there one day this week. Well, that's pretty incredible if you stop and think about it. The idea of a town is advertising that a food truck is going to be there. That apparently is really a growing business, and it's something that you – and here's the deal. The failure rate – this is something interesting. According to several studies, the failure rate for food trucks is just 10 to 20% as opposed to almost 60% for brick-and-mortar restaurants. Something to think about. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. You're listening to Eddie Mayfield. This is Driven to Business. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. A reminder, once again, we're streaming live on biz1190.com. And today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. You can email me at eddie@eddiemayfield.com. If you want to know the business I'm in, go to emainc.net and check us out there. We're in the electronic motor drive business, a business that most of you know nothing about, and that's fine. It means you're not a prospect, but it's been a good living for us, and we're glad to be in that business. I was talking right before the break about the idea of food trucks, and that sort of catches me, caught me a little off guard when I read that Ms. Fallon had suggested that was a great business for 2015, but then I began to look around a little bit after reading that article, and she's right. There is a huge growth in it, and the very idea that those have a much, number one, they have a much lower upfront cost. Think about that a minute. Think what it costs to open a restaurant, a brick-and-mortar restaurant, and what all you've got to put in there. Much, much less cost in opening a food truck. Now, the obvious problem with a food truck is, you know, you can't sell food driving on the freeway, so you're going to have somewhere to park it. You have to figure all that out. You have to go what kind of food. You're going to be limited in that and where to go put it and where to be and all that. But apparently, you can go to some websites, look that up, get some ideas in. But again, with the right equipment and with a great recipe, that could be something you could get a mobile eatery up and running. One of the other things that she mentions, this covers a wide, as a business opportunity for 2015, this covers a wide array of businesses, and I fully do agree with this. The idea of freelancing anything. You know, one of the ways to make money is to just figure out what, let's say a small, if you're targeting businesses, or perhaps you're targeting consumers, whichever way you want to look at it, but let's stick with the business side, which is where I have more expertise. If you can find what the manager or the owner of a business really needs to do but hates doing, if you can figure what that is and you go offer to do that for him at a fairly reasonable price, and he has confidence in your ability to get it done, you will get that work. And freelancing is a lot of ideas. In fact, you could build an entire company around freelance services, even the ones that you don't have expertise in, as long as you could find people that do. And you could be the coordinator of them. There's a website called freelancer.com, which lists more than a million freelance projects on its site. Here's what the most common things that people need help with. They need help with data entry. That sounds like that's a no-brainer, right? But, you know, a lot of times businesses, most businesses these days, they run as lean and mean on people as they can because Obamacare is one of the reasons for that. The people do not want the cost, the benefit cost of care, and it's not just Obamacare, it's a number. The benefit cost of carrying a customer of an employee is very high. So they carry as little employees as possible, which means that a lot of data does not get entered. They'll end up with piles of data needs to be entered, and they have no one that has the time to do it. You know, it's one of those things where you say, okay, she's going to do this or she's going to do it, and then, you know, a month goes by, it hasn't been done. That's a job you can do. You can say, look, I'll put all that data in there for you. I'll put it in for you. It just requires the ability to know how to do data entry. So, again, you can farm yourself out to do that. Academic writing is a big freelance idea. That's one of the most common things people need, academic writing in that regard. Excel projects. You know, many of us use Excel, and we think there's nothing to Excel. Anybody can put things in Excel. And if you're really good at that, what you might be surprised to learn is there are a lot of people who have no clue how to put things in Excel or how to make them come out of there in any kind of usable forms in terms of charts and things of that sort. If you can do that, and you can go to a company and you can say, look, I'll take all the data that you're gathering, because we all gather data these days. We all gather data. The problem is, what do you do with it? Well, data's no good if you don't do something with it. And if you have the ability to take that data, put it in usable form for those people in that business, put it in a spreadsheet for them where they can sort it however they want to sort it, show them how to do charts, or go ahead and do it for them, do some charts and things of that sort, even perhaps where they can put them into presentations and so forth for either employees or customers or whatever. That's a valuable job, and if you can do that, it's something you can do. There's also a lot of data processing type jobs around. You can do, if you're good at web things, you can manage somebody's website for them. We have a part-time person that manages our website for us. He happens to be in France, as a matter of fact, and he's not an employee. I said part-time. He's not an employee. He's someone we outsource that to. Could we do it? We have a bunch of engineers employed who are pretty good. Some of them very good with software. Could we do that? Yeah. But we would much rather have them doing our core business, which is not a website. And we have a very good, we have a great website. We have a good website, and it's very usable, and we do write a lot of business off of our website. But again, rather than us dealing with that, we outsource that to somebody who knows what they're doing, can do, you know, in a few minutes what it takes us hours to do. And we have a problem, we just send them an email and say, hey, we need this taken care of, and it takes care of it, and that's the end of that. If you can do that, if you have the ability to do those kinds of things, you can make yourself valuable to somebody just by offering that service. Again, those kinds of freelance services. This day and age, people are very interested in their social media presence, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or any of these things these days. If you have the ability to do that, if you're good at it, and you have a bit of a proven track record in this, well, then you can probably talk to a company and say, look, for a set fee per week or whatever, I will take care of that for you. You want to do it, I'll take care of it for you. That would be very appealing to a lot of CEOs who know that needs to be done from their small business, but they don't know how to do it, or they don't take the time to do it. Because a lot of times it's not that they don't know how, it's that they don't have the time to do that. And so, you could take that off of them. Generally speaking, this kind of job, and again, the rates will vary all over the place, but you're generally talking 30, 35 to 50 an hour kind of things. Now there are some specialized ones you could probably get $100 an hour for. Well, you know your field. I don't, so you can get that done. The other business she mentioned was mobile consulting. You know that, now I have a hard time believing this, but there's been some research from a company called 60 Second Marketer that says there are more people on this planet that own mobile devices than own a toothbrush. Now that's hard to buy. I'm not sure I would agree with that fully. But there absolutely are a lot of people with mobile devices. You can't drive here in Atlanta without seeing half the people in traffic, when they shouldn't be, fooling around with a mobile device. If you've been to any kind of a sporting event, or where you're at church, or whether you're in a restaurant, or you name any public place, and you look around and see who, it'd be easier to count the people that do not have a mobile device either sitting on the table or in their hands than the people that do. We almost expect it these days. And you know, your customers, just as a business, your customers these days expect you to be available. They expect to be able to pick up the phone and call you and your mobile phone, and there's no more of this, I didn't get the call, I didn't hear this. They know good and well you've got your phone in your pocket. So when you say, I didn't hear the phone or that or the other, or you can be like me and leave it sitting on the table and go off somewhere, which I do occasionally. But generally speaking, people do expect you to respond to them rather instantly. You know, we're in, and so if you're able to deal with people in a mobile consulting role, teach them how to use mobile devices in their business, both from dealing with their customers to even perhaps internally. We had Dharmesh Vora here on the program a few weeks ago. Dharmesh is helping us design some enterprise software that we were calling EMA Workstream, and part of that is that our technicians will all have pads with them, and it'll be immediate communication between the pads and between while they're on field service jobs and things of that sort. Well, more and more people are doing that. If you have expertise in knowing how to do that, well, then you can hire that right out. There's an ongoing need for this. It's almost, if you stop thinking about it again, even if you don't believe the idea that more people own a mobile device than own a toothbrush, it's certainly safe to say that a huge, huge number of people own mobile devices. And that presents a business opportunity for you as a business. You need to go where your prospects are. And your prospects are all walking around with mobile phones. Now, are they just going to hand you their numbers? No, probably not. Again, that may take a little bit of expertise on your part to figure out how to do it. Now, one thing you can do is, that a lot of companies do these days, is to come up with some kind of an app that's relevant to them, they'll want to do. I'm even seeing churches do that these days. A lot of businesses are doing it. We're looking at it. The idea of having an app, we have, there's a Biz 1190 app. In fact, you can go to iTunes, download, you can hear Driven to Business and the other fine programming here on Biz 1190. Many radio stations are doing that now, where you can be in touch with us. Again, mobile consulting. If you have expertise in that, probably a job out there for you in a business you could be running. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190 AM, streaming live on biz1190.com and podcasting on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. And it's kind of amazing to think about that in a way. The technology even blows me away at times, but we're glad that you're here. We're talking about business ideas for 2015. I'm sort of using it as a guide for it, a little article that was written by a lady named Nicole Fallon back in January in Business News Daily. And I thought it was an interesting article there. You know, I helped teach a class at a middle school here recently on Junior Achievement Day. And you have a bunch of seventh graders in there, and you're talking to them about business. It was a lot of fun. The kids were great, and they treated me very nicely, and I had a good time with them. But I was asking several of them in there about what kind of skills you have. You know, the idea is you would talk about what's your passion and what's your skill, and perhaps how could that perhaps relate to a career for you? How could you do that? And one of the kids sort of surprised me, and I asked, what's your skill? And the little girl said, well, I have language skills. And I said, you mean like writing? You write well? She said, no. I speak a number of languages. I said, oh, really? I said, like what? And she began naming them off. And I said, well, say something in French for me. And then she rattled off this sentence in French. I guess it was French. I wouldn't know. But it sounded awfully good. I told her, I said, you know, there's a real crying need for that. And, you know, that's one of the outsourcing things, a great business idea. If you do speak a number of languages, if you are bi or tri or qualingual, which there are people in Atlanta that are, you know, right here in the Atlanta area and really all over the country right now, even in little small towns, you find businesses that are doing business worldwide. You know, our company, we buy products from China. We buy companies from, we buy parts from Korea. We do work with people in Europe. We're talking to some folks in Russia. Even a small company like us, and I mean, that's just the way things are these days with the internet the way it is. You know, it's sort of leveled the playing field and kind of opened up all the doors for all over the world to do business. But you still run into language problems sometimes. And if you're a person that has language skills, All you have to do is find out who is doing business with the country where you have language skills. Probably the most common language here in the United States, other than English, would be Spanish, I would think, because of the proliferation of Spanish-speaking people into the country. But even then, there are a lot of people, a lot of Americans speak English, do not speak Spanish, but they need to deal with Spanish-speaking people all the time as a business. And so, again, if you're good at that, if you can both read and write Spanish very well, you can be a real benefit to a business. You know, that's probably not a full-time job. The business probably doesn't hire a full-time translator. But again, it's a thing they could outsource to you, and something you could do for them. One way I would suggest finding people like that would be simply to find out, let's say, and whether it's the Spanish language or let's just say French for a minute. Find out somebody here in your area. Find out someone that's doing business with French-speaking people. That could be in France. That could also be in parts of West Africa, other places where that French is a common language. And solicit them for their business and say, do you ever need these French documents translated? Do you need, when you're on the phone and you're talking with someone that speaks French, do you need someone there to interpret and translate for you? And you may be surprised. They would very much like to have somebody do that because their French skills are poor. The French speaker's English is poor, and so there's communications there. We run into this with a company we deal with in South Korea sometimes. Both of us are trying to communicate, but you know their English skills are not exactly up to ours, and our skills of speaking Korean are pretty much nil. So we can find communication issues there. So with China, we've actually had a lady come by and do a company we were talking with in China, and we actually had a lady come by and do some translation for us because it just the trying to do that negotiation in English just got so cumbersome for both sides, it got frustrating. And also, you know, as with all languages, and there are nuances in the language that you don't understand, and perhaps you say something insulting and you don't mean to say it because of the way you phrase it, but in their culture that sounds insulting, and vice versa. They can say something that sounds to you a little too harsh or insulting, and in their culture that wasn't harsh or insulting at all. And again, you have a translator, they can explain that to you, and they can help you out with that. The job of translators, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, that's expected to grow 46% in the next few years. So if you have those skills, that's something you should absolutely do. That's a big business opportunity for entrepreneurs. And you know, here's the deal. Even if you don't speak all the languages, now this is what I would think of it as an entrepreneur. Even if you don't speak a bunch of languages, you know what? If you can find people that do and you know how to sell and market, then you can sell that service to various companies. You say, oh, you need somebody to speak Russian? Well, I've got somebody. I'll, and here's what our hourly rate for that is. Or you need somebody to speak French? I've got somebody. You need somebody to speak Spanish? I've got somebody. Chinese, whatever. I've got it. It's a great business opportunity, again, to think about that. Another one that Ms. Fallon mentions that doesn't appeal to me very much, but I'm not disdainful of it. The idea of employee monitoring. This would be a bad word at our company. We operate with our employees on a trust level. I have told many, many of our folks in the past that if I have to play policeman, you're not going to work here because I'm not going to do that. Well, there are many, many people that feel that way. But with the increasingly mobile workforce where people are working out of their homes, and I'm not even talking about people cheating on time or anything like that. I'm just saying it's hard to track it. And, you know, nobody wants a bunch of handwritten timesheets being handed in where you've got to interpret it and all that. So the being ways of tracking people's employees' times and projects and things like that, that's a big job. If you can come up with ways to do that, you can be of a big benefit to employers. There are softwares around to do that, but again, it's just like with Excel and with QuickBooks and Peachtree and all these other things. The people that run that business are taking care of their core business. They may not want to take the time to learn a new software. In fact, I'll have to tell you, that's something I don't like doing anymore. When someone tells me they've got a new and advanced way of doing something, it's a new software, I don't even like to upgrade my phone for that reason. Look, I already know how to use the one I've got. I don't want to learn a new one. And it's not that I can't learn it. I've learned plenty of them, but I'm a little tired of that. I want to do other things. I want to use the phone as a tool. I want to use my computer, my laptop as a tool. I don't want to be having to learn to operate the computer or the phone or the laptop or something like that. And you're going to find that that's not an uncommon thing. So if you have those skills, if you can come along and help somebody out in learning how to monitor their mobile employees, And again, this is not a punitive thing where you're trying to punish employees. This is the thing of just taking that data they need so the employees get paid properly, measured properly, and all that kinds of things, and get it. And you can figure out how to take that data, which is a large amount of data, and make sense of it. Well, then that's a skill. It's a freelance skill that you can do that would probably be in great demand. Now, this is one that I don't think either Isaac or I would have any use for, but it is a growing idea of a business. And Ms. Fallon mentions this. It's the idea of a traveling beauty salon. As the baby boomers age and find it harder and harder to get out of their home, a lot, and this is a female thing more than anything else, they still want their hair done, they still want their nails done, things of that sort, but they have a hard time getting out and getting to a nail or a hair salon. The idea of a mobile hair salon is actually a growing idea. People come around to folks' homes, they have all the stuff with them, they come in, they do it. Again, it's a great business, the idea of keeping somebody looking good. Now, she mentions another business that sounds like archaic almost, because it's when I was a kid, people told you to get into this, the idea of the vending machine business. We all think that, well, vending machines are, that's so passe, that's kind of like the pay phone, nobody's doing that anymore. But it's not true. The vending machine business is a booming business. It's not booming in the, probably anything selling soft drinks or whatever, you're going to have a hard time breaking into that, because in all likelihood, somebody's already got those places sewed up. And you maybe could break into it. You can go buy an existing business like that, or you can go talk to somebody that's got a contract with a vending machine company now, a company, and you can talk them out of it. It's a bit of a hard sell, but you can do that. But you know what is a bit of underserved these days is the idea of more healthy type food. And you're seeing more and more of that pop up where people sell organic vegetables and so forth in a vending machine, or they sell more health conscious type drinks in a business, in a vending machine, and things of that sort. Vending machines, again, it's like everything in business. There's no such thing as an easy business. I mean, there is no business you don't have to work in. There's no such thing as that. Some of them require more work than others, for sure. The work of a vending machine is twofold. Number one is you've got to take care of keeping that vending machine stocked and operating, because at the moment it is unstocked. Either if you've got it at a building somewhere and they start to complain, the employees in that building begin to complain, there's never anything in that vending machine, they're going to toss it out of there and your competitor is going to move in. That's what's going to happen. The other thing is you've got to go by and get money out of it. And also there's the sales and marketing side of it. You've got to get the places to put that vending machine in the first place. But owning a vending machine franchise gives a budding entrepreneur the chance to start something small and kind of test the waters and see how that goes. Now, she lists another one that I think is probably nothing I would invest in, the idea of smartphone repair. Now, I just think even as expensive as smartphones are today, I'm in the repair business. Let's say you pay $400, $500 for an iPhone. And, this day and age, you're rarely going to pay that much for it, because you're going to have some kind of a deal cut with your carrier and they're going to cover part of the cost of it and all that. So it's kind of confusing. But they certainly are more expensive than they used to be. And there are people that do have the expertise to repair them. My caution about that would be, I would think that they're going to be difficult to repair, and the profitability of that's going to be a little tough would be my idea. But there's a Pennsylvania-based smartphone repair store called iDropped that appears to be doing pretty well. So if you have technical leanings in that regard and something that's perhaps an idea, there certainly are a lot of smartphones and they certainly do break. So you could think of it from that way. Any kind of contracting, as a matter of fact. If you've ever tried to have anything done at your house recently, you know this. We hear talk all the time about the drop-off in jobs in the construction industry. That seems to be true until you need someone to come to your house and do something, and you can't find anybody that can do it. Now, part of that is that you're not in a home for a small job, like to do a repair job or something at your home. That's not a big project, and it's not particularly appealing to a big customer, to a big company, to send people out there and do that. But again, that opens up an opportunity for a skilled entrepreneur, a guy with those kinds of skills who has an entrepreneurial bent about him. There is absolutely business to be done out there. As to how much money you're going to make, it depends what kind of work you do. You've certainly got to do good work. That's a word-of-mouth business. And these days with Angie's List and all kinds of things like that, if you do a bad job, everybody's going to know about it. But the idea, there's a huge shortage in this country of skilled labor, a huge shortage, and people are having trouble doing those kinds of things. So if you can do it, if you're a skilled worker with entrepreneurial skills, you absolutely can get some business doing those kinds of things. You're listening to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. One more segment. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. In the final segment of today's program, I'm glad you're here. We are talking about business ideas for the for 2015. I'm kind of using as a bit of a guide here, an article in written by a lady named Nicole Fallon, who wrote that article in Business News Daily back in January. It's a kind of interesting little article, I think. You know, things like this, articles like this, you do have to take with a bit of a grain of salt. And I'm not, this is not an attack on Ms. Fallon. I'm sure she did a good deal of research and all that. But, you know, what works for one person does not work for someone else. And in today's climate, things can change awfully fast on you. And so you've always sort of got to be, you got to take these in stride. You know, sometimes I think when a person, when someone tells me they're thinking about starting a business, I'll ask them what it is they like to do. And, you know, you can get dollar signs in your eyes and say, well, I really want to have a business doing da-da-da, and it's because it sounds kind of glamorous or it sounds like you can make a lot of money doing it. Well, there's nothing wrong with making a lot of money. That's fine. But there is something wrong with doing something you're really going to hate. If you're a person who really can't stand being tied down to a desk, you want to be out roaming around all day, and you really, it just drives you nuts to sit at a computer. Well, then don't start a business that requires you to sit at a computer all day, because you're going to be miserable at it. So, I mean, just think that through. I always play the, tell people to play the what if I'm successful game. You know, suppose you're selling some kind of software services. I suppose you're successful. Well, what does that mean? It means you're going to be sitting at a desk writing software a long, 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 long time. You're prepared to do that? If you're not, that's what success looks like. So rethink that back. We talked about several things, and Ms. Fallon had an idea. One of the things she had talked about was the idea of doing contracting. We talked about that right before the break. The idea of doing contracting at home. Now again, this is an ideal job for somebody that really does like working with their hands and doing all that. Here's the downside to it. You can actually start that part time in a way. You really can. You can start doing that on weekends for somebody. You know, you find a lot of firemen and people like that do jobs like this, and some of them are very successful at them. If you want to make it good at this, what you need to do is duplicate yourself a little bit. Get yourself an apprentice, a young guy. Teach him how to do what you know how to do, and then hire him to be doing the jobs. Because, you know, if you're, as with any business, if it's built just around you, when you're not there, the business can't grow. So, you know, once the phone call comes and they ask you to come out and do a job, and you're out doing that job, you can't be doing another job. As a matter of fact, it's difficult while you're doing that even to book another job, because, you know, when you're at someone's house doing work, they don't really want you on the phone talking to another customer. They want you to be paying attention to what you're doing at their house. So those are just kind of things you have to do. Sometimes husbands and wives can work together and kind of support each other in that regard. But the contracting business, or then you hear referred to sometimes as a remodeling business, is a booming business. To get that done, one of the businesses that this business services of any type, and we'd already talked a little bit about freelancing, and I guess this comes under the same umbrella. But business services of any type, you know, what has happened again, as I mentioned earlier, what has happened in today's environment is that businesses have pared back on the number of full time employees they have. That's driven by a number of things, not the least of which is Obamacare. And it's not just Obamacare. There's state regulations and everything else that make it so hard to have employees. I've never understood. I've mentioned this to a number of legislators. I don't understand why legislators think that it's a good idea to punish someone for hiring people. That's never made any sense to me why that's a good idea to do that. But sometimes as an employer, that's exactly what it seems like. You get punished for hiring somebody. Well, now, here's the upside. There's an upside to every downside. If you're an entrepreneur, there's an upside to that. Here's what it is. If the people they've laid off, sometimes those jobs still need doing, whether they be all kind of business-type services. If you can do those, if you can step in and do them, if they don't have a full-time bookkeeper anymore and you are a bookkeeper type, you know, you can go in there and sell them a few hours a week of bookkeeping time, and they would much rather pay that at a contract rate and they wouldn't have an employee there doing it for whom they've got to pay benefits and insurance and all that kind of stuff. That's something you could do for them. So that's a great way to get a business started. You know, we do this at our company. We have people to come in and do our bookkeeping. I'm not talking about an accountant. We have an accountant, a CPA, that does all our, you know, our big tax stuff and all that. But in addition to that, just the idea of coming in, going through our accounting program, making sure that the balance sheets and the income statements and all that kind of thing are done for us in readable fashion, that we can make good business decisions based on what we put in there. That's a booming business for you, and you should think about doing that and how to do it. Now, let me talk to you. If you're just thinking about starting a business, you want to start a business, well, a couple things to look at. I often tell people, look at your own personality to start with. This is going to, from someone that's owned a successful business, I know this is going to sound, I don't mean it to sound like I know things other people don't know or that I'm smarter than anyone else. I don't mean that. What I do mean is there are personality types that are cut out to be a business. There are personality types that are not cut out to be in a business. And smartness has very little to do with it. I've known some very, very smart people that have miserably failed in business. In fact, if you look back through history at that, you find that very often. You know, Thomas Jefferson failed miserably in business. He was not a good business guy. I think one of the smartest engineers that ever lived, Nikola Tesla, the guy for whom we all owe a debt of gratitude, even for the fact that you're listening on the radio today, wouldn't have happened at the time it happened without Tesla, a brilliant, brilliant guy who died penniless. Tesla had terrible business sense. He was a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant guy and had terrible business sense. So that's no knocking anybody's intelligence. It's just saying that there's not everybody that should run a business. And, you know, even if you're running a department for someone else, this happened to me. If you're running a department for someone else and you have even P&L responsibility in that department, as I did out in Texas for a guy, I was amazed when I started my own business how much I actually depended on the owner of that business for just subtle advice. Now, he let me run it pretty well. I learned how to do a lot of business from watching him. But when I did start our own business, and I found it amazing how much I was depending on him, because all of a sudden you turn to the left to ask a question and there's nobody to ask. And you're having to make this decision by yourself, and you're going to pay the price if it's the wrong decision. Well, that's just part of being in business. And some of that, I think, you sort of learn on your own. But, you know, we've also had friends that owned businesses. They spent every Friday running around trying to collect money from people that owed them money so they could pay their rent or pay their employees or pay their taxes. And let me tell you, that was not a fun life for them at all. People like that, that just don't have those basic organizational skills, or it's not even skills necessarily. It's a mindset. If you don't have that mindset, be very successful where you work. And, you know, you can be entrepreneurial where you're working. You can make a ton of money for yourself and your employer by just being very entrepreneurial and very smart where you run the business, and yet don't take that step over and get yourself into something you don't know how to do. I often think about what the years ago we used to talk about in business, the what was called the Peter Principle. It came from a guy named Peter who said it, and the idea was that people tend to get promoted to their level of incompetence. And what he talked about was in a business, you know, you found somebody who was a really good technician, let's say. He's a really good technician, just the best technician in the company. So they promote him to be the technical manager of the company. Well, he has no management skills whatsoever, and he's miserable. And what you've done is taken him out of his level of competence, where he's just the most competent guy ever, and you've promoted him into his level of incompetence. Well, in a larger sense, be sure you don't do that to yourself in business, and think it through. Count the cost of it. Think it through. One of the things you could kind of look at is if you're living paycheck to paycheck right now, if you're working somewhere and you're living and you are, let's just say you're a miserable money manager, you do not do it well, you're living paycheck to paycheck right now, you really don't want to go start a business. It's not a good idea. It's going to get worse, not better. And so don't put yourself through that misery. And I want to close with this. I grew up in Birmingham, Alabama, and there were a number of immigrants that moved to Alabama before and right after World War II. Many of them literally arrived in this country penniless. I mean, penniless. And they started off, I can think of one guy in particular, started off actually selling vegetables off a vegetable cart. And from that, because he could not go any further down. He was on the bottom of the scale. It's called an immigrant idea. And he rose up through that to start a great and built a worldwide department store from that right there. Well, we'll end on that encouraging note. See you again next week. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You've been listening to Driven to Business.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit eddiemayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.